Welcome, everybody. This is How to English, Teach and Learn with Gav and Em.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary.
Em, it's time to begin Season 4's Episode 5, Types of Learners.
Indeed it is, Gav. And this is one we really need to deep dive into, I think.
I absolutely agree, because I don't think we've really dealt with this topic in the detail that is necessary.
With the detail it deserves.
With the detail that we can provide.
Nice.
And what I thought we could do on this episode is cover these three basic topics. I have in mind types of learners, learners' objectives, and some of the challenges that both learners and teachers may face.
That sounds good.
And what's more, Em, we have an absolutely fabulous guest to talk to us about different learning styles.
That all sounds very interesting, Gav, so let's start.
Let's get this show on the road.
Types of learners in what way? Because people sign up to do courses, but that doesn't mean that you know what kind of learner they are. You might have a kid's English class or a business English class or an exam class, or maybe just a general conversation class. But that doesn't tell you what the students are like.
It doesn't. It could be a one-to-one. It could be a group lesson.
That's right.
Of course, if you're teaching a group of kids, Em, for example, some young learners or even some babies.
Sorry, Gav. Babies. Have you ever taught babies?
Maybe not me personally, but lots of people do teach babies.
Babies?
You have to teach babies.
Not they toddlers, don't... but babies. Okay.
Young learners, toddlers, and you have to consider your materials will be songs, picture books, games, all of those kind of fun things to keep the young learner active and engaged. Whereas with an adult class, you have to be more focused on what the learner wants from those lessons. It could be in order to improve their English, to get a promotion, to travel abroad, maybe for their holidays. It could be a number of different motivations, Em.
Yes, you're still describing the lessons or the course, Gav. I still think if you have a group of children or business people or retirees, there's so much of a variety of personalities in there and learner styles in there. So it's really hard before you go in as a teacher to know what you're going to be dealing with. I have students that I feel want to be there. They want to learn English. I have students that I feel have to learn English, and I have students that need to learn English.
They are three very interesting categories. Could you explain them further for me, please?
So the ones that want to learn, their enthusiasm and their energy just comes naturally. It's not hard for them to find motivation. They're just interested and curious about English.
Are they the ones that volunteer to share information and are much more active within the class?
Usually, yeah. And it could be that they're just naturally very good at English or they're just enjoying themselves, but they're definitely the standout students that it just is obvious that they're having a good time doing something that they enjoy.
Are they the minority or the majority of your students?
It's hard to say. Got a real mix.
Maybe it's good that you've got a mix. So you've got some that are very enthusiastic and others who are prepared to sit back and take turns in the learning environment.
Yeah. And on the other side, you have people who really have a deadline or something they need to learn or prepare for, like an exam, and they have to be there. The feeling is different because they are perhaps a bit more reluctant and you see them struggling, but they're still motivated, they still do the work, they put in the time, but you can see it's not like a passion, I think. It's more just a job to do. And I suppose needing and having to do English is kind of similar. You know, if they need to do it for their job or they're there because their company told them to do it, the energy might not be there, the level of enthusiasm might not be there.
So you're talking about where the stimulus comes from, whether you need that for your own development or you have to go to those lessons because your company expects you to attend.
Yeah, which crosses over into objectives, I guess. but I still think that that's a kind of learner. The way that the teacher presents the information and the way the student picks it up is still connected to the reason they're there, I think, a lot of the time. But we should probably talk about styles of learning, Gav, because I think that's really important.
What is a style of learning?
I think we've got a guest to help us with this one, actually.
That's right. We have Vivi from Keybird, an online language school based in Brazil. They teach all ages and levels, individual classes for those who need to speak English with defined deadlines and goals, with over 400 teachers on their network. And Em, if you visit their Facebook and Instagram account, you will find some hilarious videos showing how students can face difficulties when using English in real life. This is something everyone can relate to. They also have introduction videos from their teaching team and lots of teaching tips, plus a great focus on communication and how to become more confident in English. They recognize that you should make your English great while still being you. Plus some fun translation activities from Brazilian Portuguese to English on their Facebook page. So I definitely recommend that everybody check out Keybird. You can find them at keybird.com.br or visit their Instagram or Facebook at K-I-B-I-R-D English.
That's great, Gav. Let's listen to Vivi at Keybird.
Hi, guys. I'm teacher Vivi from Keybird English. Have you ever seen people saying things like, I am a more visual person, or I learn better by doing things? Well, these are some of the learner's characteristics, and to be more specific, the learning styles. Well, learning styles are the ways a person naturally prefers to process, acquire language, or any other skill. When we plan our lessons as teachers, we all know it is important to focus on the learner's needs and their profile. But what we may not know, some of us may not know, is that we all have our learning preferences. Some of us may learn better by watching videos, while others would prefer listening. Some may as well like writing while listening. So it will all depend on your learning style. Specialists have developed tests to diagnose our preferences, and they relate to the physical sense we like to use to learn. There are lots of terms to classify learning styles, but let's focus on the most popular theory called VARC. There are four predominant learning styles: visual, auditory, read writing, and kinesthetic. On the official site, you can take the test for free and you can analyze your results. Understanding the modality seems to be obvious, but well, you know, in fact, it can be tricky, especially the visual and kinesthetic preferences. The authors spotted the difference between them by saying, videos and photos are kinesthetic, not visual. And kinesthetic strategy actually involves more than just doing things. Visual learners, for example, prefer graphs, mind maps, diagrams, and symbols or shapes that connect with the topic and help them get the meaning. The auditory learner prefers information that is heard or spoken. So these are the type of people who learn best from lectures, group discussions, radio, and by talking, which could be through rephrasing what they've just heard. Reading and writing preference means the person prefers information displayed as words. This includes PowerPoint, reading manuals, texts, dictionaries, and sites like Wikipedia. Those who prefer kinesthetic learning will grasp information by experiment and practicing, which includes demonstrations, videos, and sensorial activities. Well, you might be wondering how you can use VARC activities in a regular class. Let me share my story. Once I was teaching a group of teenagers, and I was teaching modal verbs for past deductions. And to make it more realistic, I brought food, stuff, to make them hold, taste, or smell. So students had their eyes blindfolded and they practiced the new grammar by saying things like, I must have taste, or I may have smelled. And they were like very excited saying things like, oh my God, what is it? It's weird. Is it vinegar? It's sour. It's acid. Well, it was fun and useful to introduce the grammar topic. And, you know, hopefully it was memorable as well. And according to experts, we have all these learning modes. Some of them is stronger than the others. So let's take me, teacher review, as an example. I have a higher preference for the kinesthetic mode. But it doesn't mean I'm only capable of learning through experimenting and doing practical or sensorial activities. We all have other characteristics beyond our highest scoring style. So if you wonder why this test could be useful, I can say that professionally speaking, the VARC test is such an important tool to understand how am I going to plan my lessons for my student. So at Keyboard English, my school, this is part of our needs analysis. So when we are closing a deal with a new student, we need, before the first class, to receive the results of their test so that we can focus on their style and develop more tailor-made lessons. So if you're interested in learning English in a more personal way according to your VARC style, we'll be glad to help. Just find us on Instagram at Keyboard English. Gavin Ann, thanks for having me. It was awesome to be here.
Thank you, Vivi. That was fascinating. And Gav, I remember learning some of this during my CELTA, different styles of learning. And we had to work out what kind of learner we were and then have a group of students come in and identify what kind of learner they are just from their response to activities.
I think I do observe them during activities and I try using a variety of activities with them just to see how they respond, see if they're maybe more interested in some of them, how they react to them. Maybe they seem a bit bored sometimes. I have noticed that when I play short videos, for example, and I look at the students' faces, they are so engaged and so fascinated by the video that I think maybe that's a great way for many students to learn.
But on the other side, a lot of people are overwhelmed by that because there are just so many things going on, not just the auditory information, but there's a lot of visuals as well. I can be quite distracted actually by something that's very visual and I find I'm not paying attention to what's being said. I'm just looking at all the nice pictures. It's great when students know their own style. I've got a couple of students who actually have told me I respond really well to listening activities and I really like doing reading. And so I know that already.
I can see all of these learning modes are easy to use, as you described. They may be visual, so you've got pictures and videos. They could be auditory. You could have a listening task. Reading, writing, they're also quite easy to do. There's lots of worksheets, lots of activities we can think of. But the kinesthetic mode or learning style, that could be a bit tricky online.
Yeah, I suppose so, especially the example that Vivi gave. But you could always somehow adapt it so that the students picked something up in their room and they were holding it, describing it without showing it to the other students. So that it could be adapted in that way, which is quite nice. I was thinking about like describing a pair of scissors or something that you're holding and you're saying, oh, they're cold and quite hard, sharp on one side. You know, these are good words and good practice for these sort of adjectives. And just to clarify, when Vivi said VARC, the first time I heard VARC, I was a bit confused, but I think it's the visual, auditory, reading, writing, kinesthetic abbreviation.
That's it, V-A-R-K, which you can search on the internet. And as Vivi mentioned, there are some tests on there and you could learn what your learning style is.
I'm really interested about the tests and I think it's a really beneficial thing to do before you start with a course. I think that would be really good to know before you go in the classroom what kind of learners you're going to have as a teacher or what kind of learner you are if you're a student. But I do wonder if you get a student who scores low on a listening task, Is it because they're naturally not that kind of learner, or is it just that that's a weaker skill that they have? It's hard sometimes to pick it apart. Obviously, we like to do things we're good at, and we get really good at the things we're good at because we practice them and because we enjoy them. So I suppose if you're good at it, you're going to enjoy it. That goes together.
That makes sense.
But as a teacher, I wouldn't just indulge my students too much in the one thing that they're enjoying. I think maybe, does that sound strict? I don't know. I just think that you have to have a variety of exercises.
I think so, because you can't always be absolutely sure what your students are capable of. Even if you think, oh, they seem to really enjoy this particular style of learning. But of course, you have to remember there are other students in there who need to also practice some other skills, learn some other ways.
You bring up a good point. What happens if you have a group where you've got some learners who are really responding to the auditory method, but others, it doesn't work for them and they're more kinesthetic learners? That's why I think there is still that need for variety. But sure, if you've got a one-to-one, it may be that you spend more time on one style of teaching. I still think that you need to bring in the other skills somehow so that they don't fall by the wayside.
I think that's often true for most courses. I always try to cover as many different skills as possible. And I think students do enjoy it, even though you may find they're less able to do some of those tasks. I think they benefit from it.
Yeah, we've talked in the past about your comfort zone, and you have got to get out of your comfort zone to learn, which is one of the things about learning English that students, I think, need to realise, that they can't stay in their comfort bubble, which may mean different methods they may not enjoy as much. Before we finish with types of student, Gav, I was just going to mention as well the personality types that you have in your class. Some people are just different, aren't they? They're just that you get people that seem quite stressed, some people that are very chilled, just different energy. That could also be something to consider if you're teaching a group, putting people together that seem to be quite well matched in their personality type. Some people are very argumentative. You have to work out how to deal with that, you know, whether you're going to bow down to them or meet them sort of halfway. As a teacher and as a student, I think these can be issues. You get very talkative people and you get people that are very shy. These are all factors that as a teacher, you have to work out how you're going to make everybody bond. As a learner, you might need to think about what's going to work for you when you go into that lesson. If you're going to need to push yourself to talk to people, if you want to improve your speaking skills, for example, you might need to do that.
Well, some students are there to practice their exam skills. Maybe they're thinking about their opportunities in the future, or they want to study abroad. There may be some students, I have lots of these, for example, who want to just keep up their level and they don't really need to go to the next level. They don't want to lose the knowledge that they have, but just stay approximately around the same level they already have. I've got some students also, Em, who just seem to want to be entertained.
Yeah.
Have you got some like that?
Yeah, that is a good point. Definitely. They've got some time. They enjoy English. They genuinely just like talking. And also, as a participant, they just like to be in a group of people doing something together.
Maybe they're just taking a bit of time out of their work so they can sit and, as you say, chat with their colleagues or chat with other students and share some of their experiences. Maybe they just want to watch some videos with the teacher and maybe comment on them afterwards. They might have been forced by their parents to attend the lessons, or their companies are paying for them to be there. They could be trainees, for example, and it's an opportunity for them to improve their English for the future. Doesn't always mean they're going to be very engaged in the lessons, Em, but they are regularly there because they have to clock in the same as they clock into work. And generally, their companies want them to focus on their business skills. Do you have any trainees, Em?
I have lots of trainees, Gav.
What's a good way of encouraging them and getting them to enjoy their lessons more?
I'm still trying to work that out. Yeah, it depends, because you still have to please the company. You have to make sure that they feel like they're there to improve their work skills and that's relevant to the job they're going to do. I think just mixing it up a bit, making a lot of different activities is good, making the lesson quite dynamic so that it keeps moving at quite a fast pace. I think lots of speaking, but I'm starting to think that focusing on concrete things that relate more to jobs and skills is better than trying to get them to open up about their lives and free time, because I don't think they're there to make friends and they don't really want to talk about themselves, which is fine.
And maybe they don't want to hear about the other people's opinions either.
They're not really interested. Sometimes it's a little bit going through the motions just to get through it, but that's that kind of lesson. I think that's the reason they're there. That's what they expect. And that's what the company want. So you have to just accept that those lessons are not going to be the most amazing, fun lessons.
Okay. Well, let's not go too much into the challenges before we've finished our objectives. We might also have beginners
who just want to get their foot on the ladder of English.
That's it. Maybe they don't speak any English.
They might just want a few phrases so that they sound good.
They might have been inspired by a TV show or a celebrity, or they have a favourite country, for example, the USA, and maybe their friends speak English and they want to be able to communicate with them when they go on holiday, or they're thinking about hiring a car or ordering food in a restaurant. It could be any of these objectives that a beginner may have in mind.
That's right. They may not have needed English ever before in their lives, but suddenly there's something that presents itself and they think, oh, that's not within my ability. I had a student whose brother got married to an American person and they just suddenly realised they couldn't communicate with the new member of the family and they really wanted to be able to talk and express things. So that was an amazing objective to suddenly need English for.
That's right. And the world is so connected now that it's very hard not to see English everywhere, Em.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I think students sometimes feel like they're out of the loop. They want to be part of this English bubble so they can get in on all the chats and the videos and whatever else.
So there are various different objectives. But Em, what about some of the challenges that we and they may face?
Well, if I could just talk about some of the challenges I face sometimes at the moment with my students. I think it's a combination of the type of learners they are and their objectives, actually. It kind of clashes a bit sometimes. For example, I've got students in one group. Half of them are really into just talking. They want the fluency. They want to practice. They're there because they enjoy English and they, as we've mentioned, they have a natural ability and enthusiasm for it. They may make mistakes, but they're more interested in communicating. And then the other half, exactly like 3 and 3, it's a group of 6. The other half are absolutely obsessed with accuracy, want every error corrected, and they just are such a mismatch. And it's quite, I could just divide them into 2 groups and let them go on their own merry way doing their thing, but then it's very divided. So to try and get that group to actually communicate together and to give them what they want is really, really difficult.
That's a really good challenge. And you're giving them skills beyond learning English, but maybe how to cooperate within a different learning environment.
Well, it does get a bit tense sometimes, especially when the ones that really want to be accurate interrupt the ones that want to be fluent to then correct them and then look at me like, why are you not correcting them? And I have to explain that it's not always about being perfect and it's about communication. But then I do agree with the people that like accuracy because there are a lot of mistakes. So I have to step in sometimes with the ones that just want to chat and say, well, hang on a minute, you are making errors.
And do you remind the students who want accuracy that you're also looking for fluency in that class?
Yeah, I do. I think it does come down to a natural personality that they have for attention to detail, that they really just are that way, that they want to be correct, and the others are naturally very extrovert and they just enjoy the ideas and the chat. So it does seem like a personality clash a lot of the time, and that's perhaps a quite extreme example because in every other class it's not quite so divided. But yeah, I do sometimes think, wow, I need to really think about this and work out how to go about teaching them. Because a lot of the time we're just caught up in conversations and debates about the best way to stop and correct, and if we should correct, and was that correct or not. You know, it detracts from the actual lesson sometimes.
Mm. And one group wants a more meaningful interaction, whereas the other really just need to be right.
Yes. And you can't really say one is good or bad.
It sounds like they're both important then.
They are both important. That's why it's hard. It is a challenge. And I've got another group who all have different objectives because they all have different jobs.
Ah.
So some of them need presentation skills. Some of them need small talk. Others just want to learn specific vocabulary for their industry. And I get the feeling that they feel a bit like they're wasting their time when they have to come to a lesson that's not about the thing that's relevant to them.
Well, how do you decide what to teach when?
That's the challenge, because it's not as if I can really do a universal lesson sometimes if I've got an IT technician and an HR manager. There are common themes, but there are skills they need that doesn't apply to the other. So I'm not sure how to go about, you know, teaching appraisal language to the HR manager when the IT specialist has absolutely no use for that.
But do they not have to have their own appraisals at some point?
That is a good point. And for that topic, that's a good example. It could be relevant. So if I have to teach the HR manager about onboarding processes, and then the IT technician needs help with how to explain coding, they're in polar opposite worlds, and there's no real way of making it relevant for the other one.
If they're especially not interested in the other student's job.
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
Yeah, they're not that interested, and they have very fixed goals that they have, and I understand that. So I have to just explain, usually at the beginning of the course, when I'm aware of the fact that there's all these people from different departments, I have to try and explain, well, there'll be lessons that are universal lessons, you know, grammar or just everyday vocabulary, but there will be specific lessons that may be not relevant. To be honest, I do try. If I see a holiday coming up and someone's not there, I think, right, now's my opportunity.
That's a really good idea. So you could prepare a few lessons, and if one of them's absent, then you could teach the IT manager the lesson you prepared for them.
That's it. But that's if it happens, you know. You can't keep going for months on end without ever dealing with that topic, because you're trying to avoid doing it with everyone. It just, sometimes you have to bite the bullet and just teach it and just say, right, everyone, let's just try and enjoy it. But yeah, it is a hard one. What about you, Gav? What challenges are you facing?
One challenge that comes to my mind, Em, is when you have a group of students and one student often misses the lessons. And then when they attend the next lesson, they don't know what everybody else is talking about. They haven't learned the grammar, and it's a real challenge for them. And I'm not sure how to help them. I try to do a quick revision of the previous lesson. I might give them a mini grammar lesson or vocabulary or something, but I can see that they're lacking the knowledge my other students have.
Mm. And it depends on their personality type, because if that person is a really dominant person, then it tends to just slow down everyone else, because you spend the time focused on that person that didn't attend explaining things or getting the other students to explain. But if they're like someone who is really integral to the group, you don't make much progress in the next lesson. Whereas if they're not that dominant, quite shy, they just fall further and further behind. So I think a good teacher has to really find a way of bringing them up to speed quickly, helping them, and maybe getting the other students to mini teach it as well, but getting through it quite quickly so you can move on.
That's true. Of course, I know the students really enjoy revising the language, and they're always very grateful when you go back and repeat something, because it isn't so easy to remember something you've learnt just once.
Yeah, we shouldn't underestimate that, actually, the value of it. So it's worth doing it anyway, even if nobody was absent, but especially if there was an absent student, because it solidifies the knowledge for those who have already learnt it, but then introduces it to the one that hasn't. I've got a student who has to do an exam, but hates English and really doesn't like learning and doesn't want to be in the lesson. And it's quite a challenge, Gav.
Is that a one-to-one or a group?
It's a one-to-one. So it's kind of a bit of an eye-rolling situation where we both just sigh a bit and say, right, let's just get on with it. But the fun's not there, and it's a shame.
Can exam classes ever be fun, Em?
Oh, yeah. I've had loads of fun exam classes. I think it's a great opportunity to actually inject fun into something that isn't that fun sometimes. But if you've got a student who's got such a fixed idea about exams being boring and tedious and necessary, it's very hard to change that attitude. And I don't know, maybe I shouldn't come down to their mood. I should try and bring them up, but I often end up mirroring the energy that they give off, which is maybe my issue.
I can see that some students just sap your energy. And even if you start the lesson buoyant, full of fun, and say, hey, everyone, let's begin. Let's have a really fun lesson today. 10 minutes in, you might be thinking, oh, this is the worst lesson I've ever taught. And these are the least interested students I'm ever going to meet.
Yeah. And you have to just find it deep down inside, a kind of a way of turning it round. But we are all human, and sometimes you just don't have that energy. So I find it a struggle when that happens. And if I'm feeling tired, sometimes it all just gets a bit monotonous and goes flat. And I think that's when I kind of give up on the activity and just say, right, let's do something different and hope it's enough to give us a bit more oomph.
On reflection, Em, I think there are lots of challenges. I'm just thinking about sometimes my students don't even want to be corrected. They don't seem to want to improve their English.
So their objectives are just to be sociable and just have some time out from their lives in English lessons.
I guess so. It's a chance for them to chat with somebody about something.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had groups that seem to just want to meet people and make friends, and they're there literally for that purpose and no interest in improving at all. And I just let them do it, to be honest, because it's a losing battle sometimes. Like, if you really are interrupting every 2 minutes to correct and there's someone there just looking at you like, I don't care, then I'm not going to be the one to keep going.
Should you not just put your foot down at some point and say, okay, enough is enough. If you're not prepared to learn something, I'm going to stop trying to teach you. And maybe you should take up knitting or something.
Oh, that's a really hard one. I mean, that is the ideal answer, isn't it? That's what we should do. But I think we're all guilty of just letting it roll. And, you know, I've had students or groups that have been just more of a casual thing. You know, it's not like we're all ploughing through a book trying to get to the next level. It's just there. Do I sound like a really unprofessional teacher? It's just the fact of it, isn't it? The job is so varied. And if everyone seems like they're having a good time, it's fine. You just got to be careful that there's not someone in there thinking secretly, this is rubbish and I'm paying for this, and then they go and complain to your manager. But I think it's important to have reviews, and with groups like that, I would need a lot of reassurance from them. I think I would need, you know, once a week or once a fortnight to say, right, everyone, how are you feeling about the course? Are you happy? Like, even if you did feedback that was anonymous, where you just gave a piece of paper and got them to write down on the paper what's good, what's bad, what would you do different? At least then you're getting reassurance that they are happy and you've given them an opportunity to tell you that they want something different.
That's a really good idea.
That's what I do with students that I'm not sure about. But one-to-ones, it's a bit harder because you're sitting there with them and you can't do an anonymous feedback form. So I think you just have to be straight down the line and say, are you okay with what we're doing? And are you happy with it? And
I think most students are quite happy to give you honest feedback as well. And you can always say, what did you enjoy? What didn't you enjoy? What would you like to do more of? Is there anything that could be better? And you can do that after a single lesson and just say, did you enjoy this lesson? We focused on this task. We used this method of learning.
Yeah, I got more confident with this actually as I got into teaching. But I remember at the beginning, I was terrified to ask because firstly, it's a very direct thing to say to someone, do you like this course and are you happy with the lessons? But also I didn't want to hear any negatives and I just felt very exposed, sort of offering that time to tell me, you know, what you could criticize about me, so to speak. So I was very defensive and I didn't really want the criticism. But as I've got older and wiser. I think I realise now it's so important to do it, and it's so important to take it on board. That's the other thing. I went through a phase of just asking and then doing nothing about it. I just needed to have it said to me.
Just going through the process.
Exactly. You have to actually write down what they say, because another problem I had was I'd hear it, it'd go in one ear and out the other, and because I was so nervous, I'd literally black out everything they said to me. So I knew I'd asked the question, but I had nothing to work with. So now I make notes, I take it on the chin, I don't take it personally, and I just think, really, like, this is my opportunity to make this person or this group of people happy and listen to them.
And you're growing as an individual.
Absolutely.
So you're refining your teaching skills. But honestly, I take it very personally when I get bad feedback. I might have a small tear come to my eye and think, oh no, they hate me. But of course, that's not what they're telling me. They're hopefully saying, your teaching is okay, but we would prefer this style of teaching. We like this kind of lesson. You have to listen to your students. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I agree that you do take it to heart because you care and you really want it all to work. And you've put so much energy into planning it and teaching it and keeping it all going. You would hate to hear at the end of the lesson that they didn't enjoy it or it wasn't what they wanted. But I think you're right. I think they're not so harsh, and they do genuinely quite enjoy the lessons. It's just, it could be better. It can always be better, can't it? So I think as teachers, we really need to be receptive to that. And also learners need to be diplomatic in the way they say it. You know, that's worth remembering as a learner. You have to say it in a nice way and maybe say something positive first before you say what wasn't great. You know, these are all skills. I definitely invite it a lot more now than I used to, because it really helps you grow as a teacher.
That's a great opportunity for us to get feedback as teachers. And maybe our students would like some feedback too.
Yes, Gav, that's another really good point. I need to get better at giving feedback to my students. That is definitely another mountain I need to climb. I could really do with some tips on how to tell my students about their progress.
Yeah, that's another episode for another time, Em.
Okay.
We'll definitely come back to that topic. Em, before we finish this show, we need to do our special feature. Do you remember what it's called?
Of course, Gav. It's called...
Learn a word. Which word did you decide to talk about today?
This episode's word is objective. I thought it was really relevant to today's topic, as our students need to have an objective in order to progress in their English.
And as we discussed in today's show, an objective could be a number of different goals the learner is aspiring to achieve.
That's very true, Gav. I learned that objective entered the English language in the early 17th century via French, originating from Latin. The Oxford Dictionary describes it as a thing aimed at or sought, like a goal.
That's a really useful word. And you've really done your homework on this learn a word, Em.
Thanks, Gav.
So that's the noun. What about the adjective?
We use to be objective to mean when your view is not influenced by personal feelings or opinions when considering or representing facts.
The opposite of subjective, when you allow your feelings and opinions to influence you.
Exactly. For example, it's important for a teacher to be objective when presenting a topic and consider all opinions, not only your own. Present the topic in an impartial or unbiased way.
I have a question, Em.
What's that, Gav?
Does the pronunciation change from the noun to the adjective?
You tell me. Try two different sentences using the noun and the adjective.
Let me try. My student told me her objective was to pass the Cambridge IELTS exam. And when writing her essay, she took an objective view on the issue. The pronunciation didn't change.
Precisely, and keep in mind that the meaning of objective is very different from to object to and an objection.
Which is expressing disapproval or opposition to something.
Yeah, don't get those two mixed up.
I'll certainly try not to. That was another really insightful episode where we covered so much. I'm curious to know about the followers' own learning styles, objectives, and possible challenges they have to deal with when it comes to teaching and learning English.
Yeah, I'm curious too. I reckon they've also had some of the same experiences as us.
Let's finish by again thanking Vivi at Keybird and everyone who's bought us a coffee at our coffee. If you haven't already, please consider buying us a drink from coffee.com. That's ko-fi.com/howtoenglishpod. One word, to show us some love.
See you next time, Gav.
Bye for now, Em.